I grew up in the 60s, the 50s and the 60s, in the San Francisco area. I got the oldest of five kids. My father was a Korean War veteran. His name was Tex Thompson. Probably the hardest man I've ever known in my life. And so I've learned a lot about father wounds in my journey in recovery. And I've also reconciled with my earthly father. I was able to pray with him on his deathbed and lead him to the Lord. And that was awesome. And but even then, when I laid my head on his chest, he was in hospice, and he only had a very short time left to live. And we had to leave. We had to come back to New England. And I had the hardest time just saying goodbye, and I finally broke down, and I just started crying and started bawling. I laid my head down on his chest. I was giving him a hug. And my wife was so surprised to just come, and he's like, "Come on now, son. You know we didn't come up like that. And quit your crying." You know what I mean? And I used to hear that a lot. "Quit your crying, or..." Anybody? I'll give you something to cry about. Okay, I just thought maybe I was the only one. So that's how I grew up. And it was a time where there was a civil unrest. A lot of civil liberties was going on. There was just a ton of civil unrest. And I was involved in all of the Black Panthers were huge in the area, in the neighborhood that I lived in. We had the Vietnam War, and then we had the hippie movement. And so you got a redneck cowboy dad named Tex that's trying to raise a family in the midst of a hippie movement. Now his son's got long hair, and it just wasn't, he was having the hardest time with it. And I realize all of that now. They were in a total culture shock. They didn't know what to do. So it didn't take long. I started, I think at age 13, smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol. And from there, it just progressed into everything. I got totally involved in the whole hippie thing. My sister and I, who's a year younger than me, I almost said my wife, because her name is Shelley, and so is my wife. She's a year younger than me. We skipped school one day to go see what, and they could take a bus and go see what Haight-Ashbury was like. And we thought we landed on another planet. Totally. Just could not believe it. We walked down the hills of San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury and everything else, and just see people, families, sitting out on their front stoop, naked as a jaybird, smoking pot, and the kids would be all running around and everything else, and they'd have flowers, and they'd just have music going, and they'd invite people over and everything else. It was just the craziest thing. And we're like, this is just too cool. And so we pretty much didn't go back to school after that. We started hanging around Berkeley University. We used to call it Berserkly. And all the street musicians and everything else. And so all of that stuff that was going on, I just so got caught up in all of it. And all of that also was involved with drugs and alcohol. A lot of hallucinogenic drugs. The high school that I went to, when I did go to school, we had open campus. My algebra teacher had hair down to his butt, and he got high. My English teacher, we had two free periods together. Well, I'd go out and get high with my English teacher, and then we'd come back to class and sit down and write down, we'd listen to Bob Dylan songs and write down our thoughts on what we got out of the Bob Dylan songs. That was after I went out and got stoned with my teacher. So that's the kind of school that I went to. I didn't really complete school. I didn't finish school. I ended up getting in a lot of trouble. I was a long-haired hippie freak that was carrying protest signs for the Vietnam War, but I was also just finding myself in a lot of trouble, doing stupid things, drinking and driving, broke into a store one time to steal alcohol. It was a trailer park store. We knew the owner. They knew us. I mean, it was the dumbest thing. It was just like we broke the door down, we stole beer, and then we went back to get soda. To figure we got caught in the process of taking the soda. It was dumb. It was just like stupid. And so from there, I ended up just on a roller coaster ride and a downhill slide, just getting in a lot of trouble. I was on probation a lot. I was in, you know, juvenile detention centers and everything else. And my poor dad just couldn't figure it. He was at his wit's end. He didn't know what to do. I say all that to kind of just build up a little bit of a story of a background and everything else. So I ended up finally realizing, man, I'm really messing up my life. I need to do something to turn my life around. And I tried to go into military. Well, no branch of the military would take me except the good old USMC. And I had to have my probation officer sign me off to Uncle Sam at the same time Uncle Sam signed me in. It was a kind of a deal. I couldn't get off probation until I went to Marines. I couldn't go into Marines until I got off probation. And so they all had to meet at the same place. And bang, there I was. And so that was a culture shock for me. I got my long hair cut off in boot camp, and that was crazy. And graduated boot camp and did really well. I graduated, and then they read off everybody's job description. They call it your MOS, the last day of boot camp after you graduate and everything else. And my name gets called, and they say, military police. I'm like, what? They said, military police. I'm like, I think somebody made a mistake. No, it says military police. I'm like, oh, man, I can't believe this. So I got home for my little 30 days vacation before I had to run off to military police school. And all my friends and everything else, it was the biggest joke. They were just like, I can't believe it. Craig's a cop. So I go to Fort Gordon, Georgia, which was an Army base, and we had to always go to the Army guard shack and everything else to find out about our military pay, which was held up. It got lost. We weren't getting our pay records, or our records didn't show up or anything else. Well, when our records finally showed up, they called me into the office and they said, we can't have you here. I said, I tried to tell you. I said, you know, I mean, I tried to tell you this is probably not the best job description for me. So they let me pick something else, and I ended up in an air wing, refueling fighter jets and everything else. And, long story short, I'm a slow learner. I ended up going in the Marines to get out of trouble and to turn my life around, and I still was getting in trouble. I ended up spending like a year in the Marine Corps brig. Almost got kicked out on a bad conduct discharge. But I had several officers who saw something good in me, and they fought for me. And I was able to get that all turned around. I was able to go up through. I spent the first 2 years as no rank whatsoever. In fact, I was referred to as Senior Private Thompson. They would send sergeants to me to report to go Senior Private Thompson because I knew my job and I knew it well. And I would have to train the sergeants that would come in, and they'd call me Senior Private and kind of laugh at it. Well, I got out, and I was finally eligible for sergeant when I finally got out because I got it all turned around. I got married. I got married young. And I still was struggling with drugs and alcohol through all that process. Had kids young, and still struggling with drugs and alcohol. My first wife at that time, she grew up in a Christian home. She actually had an experience with Jesus young as a teenager. And when she was pregnant with our first child, she was at home and just really feeling terrible and bad about life and herself and everything else, wearing the bib overalls and pregnant out to here. Just life had all of a sudden changed. She's 19 years old, you know. And the rock and roll radio station that we'd listen to, you know, sometimes the radio stations will slide into another station. Mm-hmm. You pick up another station. Well, it was a Christian radio station. Mm-hmm. And the message was, don't you miss that first love? Can't you hear the first love, your first love calling you back? And don't you miss your first love? Well, she just broke. She got on the phone, and she's trying to find a church like that, you know, where she could get ministered to and everything else. So she found one. I come home from work. I'm still in the Marines, and I was high when I got home. She tells me that this experience, she wants to go to church. And I'm like, well, that sounds like a pretty good thing for a father to be to do. Let's go. So we went, and we got the wrong directions or something, but we ended up in an all-black gospel church that was rocking. And I was just like, yeah, this is awesome. I like this. My wife's like, no, this isn't the right place. I'm like, are you prejudiced? What's the matter? This place is awesome. These guys are rocking out. And it's, hey, yeah, you know, and it was just, and I was really getting into it. It wasn't the right church, so I said, okay. So we left. And we found the right church. It was a four-square gospel church. And something happened. In 1976, I saw something in the eyes of people that were there that I hadn't seen anywhere else. That, you know, I was looking for nirvana through all of these experiences with the hippie movement and with all the drugs and everything else. And, you know, by the way, the Jesus movement came out of the hippie movement. The hippie movement was pretty cool, actually. It just got twisted and perverted with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, which is what the enemy does. He can't create anything. He just takes what God created and perverts it and then offers it to us as something that's going to satisfy. And that's how I got caught up and hung up in the whole thing with drugs and alcohol. On and on and on. Years goes by. I'm trying to do the church thing. I had accepted Jesus. I heard the gospel for the first time. I grew up a Catholic. I probably got my first good buzz of breaking into the priest's wine cabinet. You know, so a bunch of the altar boys were getting drunk on the priest's wine and stuff. But I never experienced anything like what I did in that church. And the people and the peace and the joy that they had. And the Bible tells us that God gives a peace and a joy that passes all understanding. And the world can't even begin to comprehend it. Well, I wanted it. And I've been after it ever since. But I got to be honest, I struggled for many years as a Christian. I was a worship leader. They found out I was musically inclined, and I became a worship leader. I started doing worship and everything else, but I was still struggling with drugs and alcohol. And finally dawned on me that the drug scene was probably really, really not a cool thing if you're going to be a Christian. So I pretty much tried to give that up, pretty much. But then I struggled with alcohol. My struggle became with alcohol. I knew a lot of people. I knew a lot of good Christians that could drink, and they could go out and have a glass of wine with their wife, with a meal. They didn't fall into sin, though. And that was the difference between them and me. I couldn't go out and have just a drink, because I would fall into sin. And the sin would be is that I wouldn't be truthful. I would lie. I would lie to my wife. I would lie to my friends. I didn't want people to know what I was doing or what I'd done. Fast forward. We moved from California to New England. And I'd had a couple of different periods of sobriety. Not recovery, but sobriety. There were like 6 years. And then I would relapse. And, it would be, you know, like a one-night binge or something like that. But it may be a few nights that I'd go and I'd relapse and I would just crash and burn. And then I'd be broken, and I just want to, because I was always trying to do it right. I just wanted to be able to do it without hurting anybody. I just wanted to be able to go out and have a few drinks, shoot a few games of pool, maybe listen to a band, and not sin, not hurt anybody. I can't do that. I couldn't do that. I was in chains. I was in bondage. I became totally addicted to drugs and alcohol, and it just really got a grip on me that wouldn't let go. And I cried out. I cried out for the Lord to set me free. I cried. I've heard stories of people just being home, touched and set free right on the spot. That didn't happen to me. And I don't know why. I've stopped trying to figure out why. I think sometimes we have to go through what we have to go through until we finally get what I call a gift of desperation. It's what they call it in the program. It's a gift, and it really is a gift. You come become desperate. You're sick and tired of being sick and tired. Well, I had been doing really good. Another, I think, period of about 7 years, and had a whole lot of stuff go wrong in our lives. Just a whole lot of trials and tribulations. Consider it all joy, right? When we encounter various trials and tribulations. I wasn't, and it became challenging for me. I had a injury that put me out of work. I ended up in my 40s being told that I probably wouldn't be able to do what I'd done all my life due to the injury, and that just set me on, a midlife crisis. I ended up going to college, getting a degree in video and radio production. I did quite well. I stayed on at that school as a lab instructor, making pretty good money. But there was the issue with other people, always the professors and everybody else saying, hey, let's go over to Dave's Bar and Grill. And I'm like, no, I'm good. But that invite would keep coming my way, and I would finally succumb to it. And it devastated me. I realized, man, I this is not good. I need help. And that's the first time I really reached out for help. I ended up going through the VA hospital, which ended up being really kind of in a lockdown psych ward of the VA hospital at that time. But that's how I ended up finally learning about the program of the 12 steps. In the midst of that, my wife decided that, she had found somebody else, and then she wanted a divorce. And I tried real hard to accept that. I tried real hard to have my own apartment after I finished the program that I went through and set everything up so that I could go get my kids and bring them to stay with me, and they would have their own room and their dresser and everything else. But it was just tearing me up inside. It was eating me up inside. It was killing me. And I finally, at that point, fell further than I'd ever fallen before. I fell off the planet. I used to go to AA meetings, and I would hear people say that they became homicidal and suicidal, and I'd laugh. I'd say, yeah, right. You know, get a break, you know. Well, I had become all of that. I was so much pain, and I didn't know how to turn it over. I didn't know how to lay it down at the cross. I didn't know how to make that pain go away. And I ended up in the worst shape and in the worst place. But it ended up being the best place, because that's where I found the gift of desperation. I had my daughter, and my best friend had me arrested for my own protection at one point. And in that process, they had found a program called the Bridge House in Framingham, Massachusetts. I didn't even know where Framingham was. I was living in Rhode Island at the time. The pastor of my church had brought me here and dropped me off. And I went through that program. It was an all-men's program, a 6 months to 9 months long program. I actually stayed there 2 years. I was 138 pounds when I got there. And I was really sick and really broken. But it saved my life. As a Christian program. I'm thinking, wow, this is cool. I'm going to go to a Christian program. I'm going to bring my guitar. I'm going to bring all my music. Well, come to find out, all these guys just got out of the joint. You know, and not too many people are singing hallelujah songs on the guitar. You know, and these guys that I'm hanging around with, they got all tattoos and they're smoking, you know, and I'm just like, whoa, what have I landed myself into? What kind of a mess have we gotten ourselves into now? But it ended up being the best thing, because that's where I found out that my Father loves me. That's where I found out that I started to really understand for the first time that God really loves me. In spite of all of, regardless of, right where I was at, 138 pound mess, He loved me. And He loved me beyond all measure. And I started soaking that in. I say all that to say this. What I found, and I've been in and out of the halls of AA, the halls of NA, and all of those halls for a lot of years, and I encourage people to go. I think they're great. I think that the 12 steps are, every single one of them are biblical principles that were taken right out of Scripture and used. But what was said, it was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that was proven to be the best at helping people in this journey, bar none, than any other thing. Something that I noticed in the last probably 30 years is that concept of the fellowship changed, and it was a big shift. In the majority of the meetings that I'd been around anyway, it became more program. And programs are the cool thing now. If you look at Hollywood, they're all going to programs. Everybody's going to a program of some kind. They're checking into programs and out of programs. What we found out in the last 13 years of working in a residential treatment facility is that people are on this revolving door syndrome of going to do a program. Then they get out, but they don't change. They didn't change. The renewing of the mind didn't really take place. And so they go and they crash and burn, and then they come back, if they're fortunate enough to be able to get back, and go through the program again. But it's the fellowship, like what we're having right here, right now. It's people touching people. It's people being gut honest with one another. As we get honest with ourselves and we get honest with God. So it was the love of my wife, my new wife. God blessed us both with a new marriage, and it's just been, she had become my best friend, and 15 years later, she's still my best friend. Her love for me, in the midst of even some of the chaos that I'd been in, blew me away. It totally blew me away. I don't know if we shared the last time that we were here, we wrote a song called Love Is. Because this thing is so, they say it's insidious. We were a year into our marriage, of the most beautiful thing that ever happened to me in my life. And I had gotten laid off from work. I was doing some handiwork. I was doing some job for a friend of mine who's also a brother in the Lord at his house. And his wife was an active alcoholic. So I believe that there was a spirit of alcoholism, a spirit of addiction in that home. And I started again with the stinking thinking. As I would go home, I'd think, boy, you know, I've been working hard. I just a couple of beers and I just to chill out. And then I'd rebuke that thing. I'd say no, and I'd pop in worship tapes and I'd pray and everything. But you know what I didn't do? Was get somebody else involved in my life. I didn't call somebody. I didn't have the fellowship of other people. I found myself in that bar. We actually had, it was on Yom Kippur, 13 years ago. We had friends over. We were going to have a special dinner for Yom Kippur and just celebrate Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is one of the Jewish feasts. It's one of the Jewish holidays, holy days, and it means the Day of Atonement. I was nowhere to be found. I wasn't there. I was there at the house. I was at that bar that was screaming out to me, having a couple of beers, and I couldn't believe it when I came finally to that what I had done. And I'm on the phone ready to call my wife and make up some kind of story because I could not let this be ruined by my stupidity. I say stupidity. It was addiction. But that was the first time ever in my life that I finally just got on. I got on the phone. I had it all set. My tire got slashed. I walked out, whatever. I don't think she would have bought it anyway, but she's pretty smart. I couldn't do it. I said, I can't do it. I just can't do it again. I have to tell the truth. I have to get straight and be honest. And I broke down and I told her. I was a worship leader, one of the worship leaders at our church. I had to go and tell the worship pastor. I had to go tell our pastor. And I had to get straight and honest with people for the very first time. Well, God gave her a song that was right straight out of the book of Corinthians 13. It was just All Love Is. And it was to the tune of another song that we'd already done, Amazing Grace, which was done to a different tune. And she had me play that while she sang the song that God put on her heart. First she wanted to beat me over the head with a frying pan, I think. But God really put that song in her heart, and it slayed me. It slayed me. And I haven't been the same since. I have gotten so a hold of how much my Heavenly Father loves me that there's nothing that could draw me back again. I've been set free. I've totally been set free. Now I go and I still do a 12-step. I still stay involved in recovery. But what I don't do is say, hi, my name's Craig and I'm an addict and an alcoholic anymore. Because that became my identity. And that's not who I am. That's not my identity. I'm a child of God. And I'm loved by Him. Because He's a good, good Father. It's who He is. And I'm loved by Him. He's crazy about me. And there's nothing like it. Jesus came to bind up the brokenhearted and to set the captives free. And I'm here to say I'm free. And you can be too. You know? And that's the journey that I'm on now. I pray all the time to just ask God, how can I be a part of ministering to others so that we can pray for them, so we can break this thing off, so we can be set free once and for all and have life abundantly to the fullest, the way that we were intended to be, the way that God created us to be. And so, thank you so much for having me. And